coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation. It's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman Report. First out of the gate for the new year, this is Tuesday, January 4th, 2022. And I want to welcome everyone to a new year. I hope everyone had a great new year, safe. I know there's a lot of travel issues on I-95 right now, and has been for the last 24 hours. A lot of people stranded on Interstate 95, about 30 miles south of D.C. into Virginia. I pray for those people, and of course, the people that have had been affected by severe weather and such. It's just an incredible time. Eric the Tech, happy New Year. Did you have a good New Year, my friend?
I did.
All right. I have a very complex show to get into today, a very heavy information-laden show. Just to give you an idea, I prepped for about 45 hours, okay? Now, you might say, oh, come on. What I did was over this break on New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, this is how we spent our New Year's, those 2 days, going through video upon video, document after document after document, going back actually to the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, the archive documents, all kinds of newspaper reports and articles. So all of this is a culmination of all of that, both historical and current. So a lot of information to get into. And really this is, I believe, after all of that research, really, that was over 4 days, but out of all of this research, I believe that what we're witnessing right now is the absolute end game, the final quarter, if you will, of this game, of this, if this were a football game. Hey, this is the final quarter, all right? This is for all the marbles. Everything is really playing out for that specific end game scenario. But this was set in motion years, decades ago, actually millennia ago, biblically speaking, but nonetheless. Everything I'm about to tell you, all the source videos, all the source documents, all the source pages will be in the program description box at HagmanReport.com. This episode, open it up. And everything will be there. And I would encourage everyone to download not just this show, but the supporting documentation. Download them, all right? Because it's extremely important. Now, before I get into this, a couple of announcements here. First of all, Stan Dale is ill today, tonight. I'm going to tell you right now, he's going to have surgery on Thursday. And I spoke to him yesterday. He says, I'm feeling pretty bad. He's going to have, not totally invasive surgery. I mean, he's got some issues with his kidneys and such. So, and he's spoken openly about it. So he's in a lot of pain today. I would ask that people pray for him today, pray for him getting well. So Stan Dale will be undergoing surgery on Thursday, and let's keep him in our prayers. Thursday, speaking of Thursday, Steve Quayle will be joining me for the entire show on Thursday. Now, I spoke to him today, and I've got to tell you, what he's got to offer on Thursday is absolute gold in terms of information. When we were talking off air, he was explaining what he wants to convey on Thursday, and I just, I know what he knows or what he's found out. And for me to attempt to explain it, it would be a train wreck. So I just can't wait for Thursday. And you'll be able to hear Steve and his analysis and information of new events and connecting some dots. Because don't forget, and I'm going to be playing a little segment from Steve and Gary Haven from last year that's relevant to today. So Steve's always ahead of the curve on this. All right, on everything, essentially. All right, what I want to do right now is I want to open with this video. This is a 2 minute 15 second video. Oh, by the way, I should add this. At some point this month, now Steve and I are going to have a special, do I want to say money bomb? I don't know what that would be. A special program, I think on the third week of January. The information that he has collected, his teams have collected, the information that that really is special information that cost a lot of money to accumulate, the evidence, the artifacts, the angelic writing translations, just incredible stuff. Things that actually, if you remember, we spoke. Things that Russ, myself, and others were working on before Russ passed away. It's just an amazing disclosure. So that's going to be, we believe, the third week of January. But the reason I mentioned that is because I'm going to have jaw surgery. So if you notice that I'm not, you know, I'm more tongue-tied than usual, it's because of my jaw, the trauma from my jaw. And so I've got to have a bone fixed, and apparently they can't reuse the teeth I have, so I guess I have to have some implants there, some other things over here from that little, I took a tumble some time ago. And anyway, so that's gonna put me out for about a week. So I don't know when that's going to be. I'm going to try to get it sooner rather than later. I asked the doctor if I said, you know, will I be able to talk, you know, fluently and well after that? And he looked at me and said, I can't work miracles. So anyway, that was supposed to be a joke, but nonetheless. So I'll keep you posted on that. Right now, again, I want to open with this, because right now this is, you know, people talk about, is this a hill to die on? Do we really need to die on this hill? There are no more hills. Well, I mean, there will be, but certainly not any more hills that will afford us the opportunity to turn things back. Can we turn things back? I think we can, but not in the way we believe we can. And, oh, I want to mention one other thing. I received an email last week. I was really very pleased that we, speaking of Russ and his team and Craig Sawyer and others, that there are two young girls that spent Christmas and New Year's, 6 and 7 years old, with loving families that were saved from human trafficking, sex trafficking. And we were responsible for that. And I received an email from someone who said, well, you know what? That's like peeing in the ocean. That's a drop in the bucket. It really, you think you're making a difference. You're really not making a difference. And I thought about that for a minute, and I realized what that emailer was saying. I fully understand that. But I thought to myself, you know, I wonder what you would say. I wonder if you went up to either the six or seven-year-old girl and said that to them, emailer. I wonder if they'd feel the same way, because it makes a difference to them. And, you know, but you're right. I mean, it is a drop in the bucket. There are so many other young girls and young boys and people that we really need to save and to rest from the human trafficking. But to diminish the efforts just because, hey, only two, you think you're changing the world? You're not changing the world. No, but you know what? Changing the lives of those two young girls. So I make no apologies for that number. Now, before I continue, hey, you know what? It's January 4th right now. I can't believe it's 2022. And let me ask you, are you now? Are you already thinking about those credit cards you used over the holidays? I bet you are. Don't lie to me. You are. I know you are. Hey, I've got the answer for you. My fine friends at Lightstream, lightstream.com/Hagman. Let me explain something to you. You can lower your interest rate and save with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream right now, because Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and no fees, and you can even get your money as soon as the same day you apply. Now, just for my listeners, apply now to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Hagman. I'm going to spell it out for you. It's LIGHTSTREAM. That's lightstream.com/Hagman. This is subject to credit approval. Rates range from 4.98% APR to 19.99% APR and include a 0.50% auto-pay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Hagman. Remember, slash Hagman, and two N's on Hagman, by the way. That's H-A-G-M-A-N-N. That's lightstream.com/Hagman for more information. You'll thank me later. You'll be glad you did. All right. Opening this up, RFK Jr., and now he's got an issue with his voice box. The ear is forced into the reason he talks the way he does is because of a syndrome that he's got where the ear gets trapped in the voice box. And so it's a little bit difficult. You may think that he's difficult to listen to. Understand, again, that it's a medical condition. You know, I certainly would not make fun of anyone who talks because of a medical condition in that fashion. And I know that he's gotten a lot of crap on social media, and I think it's just horrendous. But listen to his message, 2 minute and 15 second message, where, and this was posted on Gateway Pundit, but this is him saying that we have to stop, that we have to confront tyranny right now. And you know, I was mentioning to my wife, there's not a lot that I agreed with RFK Jr. about. Okay, but I'm 100% behind him on this, as well as his book about Anthony Fauci. And we had a Patreon meeting a month ago. And by the way, the new Patreon, or this month's Patreon meeting was moved from this past Sunday to next Sunday. And the reason for that, I will tell you this, we were doing some field investigation on Sunday and yesterday, which is why we were absent from the program. Field investigation, because we are an investigative company, and this does have to do with the investigation into the human and child sex trafficking in the tri-state area up here. So, but let's go ahead and play this clip. I was talking about the Patreon meeting, how quickly that fleets from my head. The participants in that meeting, and those people who qualify, okay, for the meeting, but for example, couldn't attend. If you're listening to this now, I did send out, or I did purchase for those members who asked, a digital copy of RFK's book. I extend that to the people who qualify to attend the Patreon meeting, which will be next Sunday. Again, I will reiterate and extend that to anyone who wants that. Please send me an email, Doug@HagmanReport.com. In the subject line, put Patreon subscriber RFK book. Okay. But you have to let me know the email to send the digital file to. All right. So, in other words, in the body of the email, just put your email address or the email address that you want the book sent to. Confirm it with me. That way it's not hanging out in cyberspace somewhere. Did that make sense, Eric the Tech? Were you even listening? All right. Cool. All right, let's play RFK, and this will start off this segment or this program with this. Go ahead.
It's time we started standing up to all of these mandates. You remember when the government told us, when Tony Fauci told us that we were going to lock down, he said it was for 2 weeks, and now it's been almost 2 years. And I'm going to tell you three things that you need to remember in this critical day and age. One is that once government acquires a power, it never lets it go voluntarily. The second thing that we need to know is that every power that government acquires, using this pandemic as a pretense, it will ultimately abuse to the maximum effect possible. And this is just a rule that is as certain as gravity. The third thing that you need to know is that nobody has ever complied their way out of totalitarianism. Every time you comply, the demands will get greater and greater. We need to resolve that here and now, this is the hill that we need to die on. They have come for our jobs. They've come for our transport. Now they're coming for our children. And we have an obligation as parents to protect them. There has never been a government in history that has told its people, we are going to demand that children sacrifice themselves and take risks to save old people. It's always the other way around. The old, the mature, the adults always put themselves at risk to protect their children. This is an ethical issue. It's a moral issue. It's an issue of character for each of us. And it's an issue about the preservation of democracy and public health. We all need to stand up now and do everything that we can to block these power plays by authoritarian powers that are trying to steal from us the health of our children.
All right. That was RFK Jr. And by the way, over the last several days, I've had communications with a number of people that you're going to see in this segment, in this broadcast, in this episode. There is a conformity of thought that none of this is about health. It never was about health. That none of this was about keeping us safe. You know, the term mass psychosis, mass formation psychosis, all of a sudden it's in vogue now because Dr. Robert Malone, being on Joe Rogan, had talked about it, and others have talked about it. This is great. We've talked about this in the past. More on that in a second. I want to show you this. This, I believe, is from Austria, this next clip here. And you can go ahead and play this and allow this to run in the background while I convey my thoughts. Eric the Tech, if you don't mind, that's clip 15. And this was posted on Twitter. And folks, I want you to take a look at this. And I want this to sink in with everyone. In this Twitter clip, now take a look at this. These are people standing up for freedom, for medical freedom, against medical tyranny. And the reason for the lockdowns, the reason for all of these mandates, whether it's Australia, Austria, whether it's Germany or France or the United States or Canada, they will tell you it's for your own good. It's for your own health. It's for your own safety. Take a look at these images on your screen. How much more do we need? How much more do you need to be convinced that this was never about your health? This was never about a virus. This was never about a pandemic response. That everyone, every single moron, muppet involved in the execution of this is part of the problem. We had ample evidence. We have evidence of what has taken place and what's taking place right now. Just as we have evidence for the next phase. The next phase is going to be the Great Reset, the cyber pandemic. This is the next phase, the cyber pandemic. And what do I mean by that? Well, Glenn Beck did an expose, I believe it was yesterday or even maybe earlier today. I'm not 100% certain. About the Great Reset proponents are wargaming massive cyber pandemic and how this will impact your financial future. This is what it's all about. Again, the vaccine passports, that two words wrong in so many levels. The free passes, all of this is about the complete and utter subjugation of those who survive this great assault on humanity. All right, to further subjugate everyone. This is not a game. Remember when they said, by 2030, you won't own anything and you're going to be happy. Klaus Schwab, the World Economic Forum, believe them when they say, at least the first part of that, you won't own anything. And the members of the global power structure have laid the foundation for this great reset of capitalism. They've taken advantage of every crisis that has arisen over the last 100 years plus. But their ability now to capitalize on the fear, for example, the fear of the coronavirus or COVID, the pandemic, has been exquisite to them. Now you can see people starting to resist, and it's starting to drop off, obviously. Well, there's a 10-country war game scenario taking place right now. Glenn Beck had a gentleman by the name of Justin Haskins. He was the editorial director of the Heartland Institute on his radio program, talking about a recent simulation done by proponents of the Great Reset that may hint as to what is coming with respect to this international digital currency. And make no mistake, this is more than just currency. This is your entire life. This will be your ability or inability to buy and sell, move about freely, be a free citizen. But those who survive the chimeric attack, if you will, or the attack of the transhumanist agenda, which we're seeing through these genetic, and I wrote a phrase down here to describe the shots, because people say, oh, you know, vaccines, they describe them as vaccines or jabs. I wrote this down here. I want to just, because I thought this was pretty good. Here it is right here. Gene transfer technology. These shots. Gene transfer technology. There's a component, an element here that transfers this, or that are attempting to make all of humanity, all of God's creation, to destroy God's creation through these injections, through this transfer of genetic technology, to, like in the days of Noah, to contaminate our humanity. That's the objective here. And for those who are not contaminated or not changed genetically, well, our way will be made very, very tough for us. Okay. Let me just get back here. Okay. So you saw RFK. You saw the video from Austria. That video, that can be replayed in hundreds of countries because the response is the same, is it not? So if this was about your health, if this was about your safety, you wouldn't be seeing that. And you wouldn't have to incentivize, for example, the treatments. But let's dig into, if it was a real vaccine, you wouldn't have to incentivize people to get them. Hey, here's $100, here's this, here's that. Plus now they're coming for our children. And this is a very decisive point in time that we must fight back. But we're under this delusion, this mass formation psychosis. But before I move on, there are three videos that you've got to watch. The first video, of course, is, and two of them are Joe Rogan's shows. And the links to the entire shows, again, HagmanReport.com. I watched those two shows, one with Dr. McCullough and the other one with Dr. Robert Malone. I watched them twice and I took copious notes, and there's a lot of information. Now, Malone and McCullough disagree, for example, on a couple of things. One disagreement is whether you can actually be infected by the virus more than once. Dr. Malone says, yeah, And Dr. McCullough says no. But okay. But aside from that, but they're pretty much on the same page about everything else. But I want to go back to October 29th of last year. Before the talk, the more recent talk about mass formation psychosis. And this comes into how we need to fight this tyranny. Gary Haven was on with Steve Quayle on this broadcast, October 29th of last year. It's hard to believe it's 2022, right? The title of that broadcast was "There's a Holocaust Coming for Our Children." And what are we seeing now with, not only has the jab been approved for children five, as young as five and even younger, but specifically, and boosters, they're talking about boosters now for children at that age. It gets worse. It's bad. I mean, so the people, however, the parents, those people who are still under the spell of this mass psychosis are willingly sacrificing their children. And I say that with a heavy heart because I know that there are people listening to this broadcast right now who say, hey, I'm doing the right thing. I'm taking my children. I don't want them to die or have problems from COVID-19 or the SARS-CoV-2 virus. Look, I get that. I understand where you're at. I don't agree with it, but I understand, okay? But listen to the warnings, the information and the warnings by Gary Haven and Steve Quayle. This from October 29th. The link will be in the program description box at HagmanReport.com. The title of this is "There's a Holocaust Coming for Our Children," and this, in fact, was very prophetic, and it preceded the mass formation psychosis discussion that we're having right now. This starts about 3 minutes and 50 seconds into this broadcast. I'm going to let it play for a little bit and then jump again to another section. Go ahead and run this.
As well, and I want to thank Doug for having me on the program today. I'm going to talk about perhaps the after the gospel, the most important thing people need to hear. And I've just set the standard really high, and I'm not doing that out of hyperbole, but we're really in desperate times right now. And so many of us are in a trance, particularly the Christians. And what I'm talking about is that they are coming for our children. And so I'm going to share some logic, some evidence first, and then I'm going to share my vision that God gave me a few weeks ago. You know, the Bible says, fear not, over and over and over. But nowhere in there does it say, think not. And I'm afraid that many, many people are thinking not. They're in a trance. In fact, there's a name for that trance. There's a wonderful video done by a group called Back to School, and it's spelled S-K-O-O-L. You can find that on YouTube. And we're dealing with a mass psychosis in this country. It was brought upon us by people in power. And the way you bring about a mass psychosis is through fear, waves of fear, terror even. I think it's reasonable to say that we've been terrorized by the institutions that we're supposed to trust. So I want to begin with that. Our medical community, with a few heroic exceptions, have trusted the FDA, the National Institutes of Health, and the Center for Disease Control throughout this so-called pandemic. But if you look at how they've led us, I think that we need to take a realistic look at the evidence as to whether they're longer trustworthy.
Okay, and can I think you pause that just for a
most
second?
Most of the people.
Keep that on the screen because we're going to go right back to it. I just want to present this to you folks. There are about 500 medical doctors, either MDs or DOs right now, in the United States who are actively fighting against the medical establishment, which is really not a medical, it's a medical tyranny. And I just want to say 500, but that number is growing. And when I say 500, I'm talking about the medical doctors, the MDs and DOs, who have actually set aside or sacrificed their practice or sacrificed their hospital privileges. Now, there are more that are fighting, but there are 500 that are out front. I'll just say that. And as we go through this, what's happening right now, despite the mass formation psychosis, you're seeing the people in power, the people, the tyrants, what you're seeing is they are watching from their small perches of power, the curtain being just drawn open, exposing the man or the power structure behind the curtain. And there's a race for time, despite the fact that the mass formation psychosis is strong worldwide. They're understanding that there's an element, a segment of the population, and 500 plus doctors who are attempting to expose what's going on. All right. This is important because we need to know where we are in this battle. And there's also another element here, which they would hope the people in power, the 150, 200 people who are really the power brokers, the members of the people behind the curtain, shall we say. They underestimated the fact, or they didn't take into account. They had hoped that this mass formation psychosis would actually take over the mothers, the intuition, the instinct of the mothers, and to some extent it has. But they've awakened this really massive and really gigantic sleeping giant in terms of the moms, and in many cases the fathers as well. But the family unit, and saying, look, you're not going to do this to our children. Now, that also extends into the curriculum in school, the CRT, critical race theory teachings, which is why you see the Merrick Garland and his Department of Justice coming down on the parents who are outspoken at the school board meetings. So all of this, again, you cannot look at any one specific battle in isolation. This is all part of the bigger war. So let's go ahead and continue with where we left off with Gary Haven, if that's possible. Okay, good. Go ahead.
I agree that they are no longer trustworthy institutions and that we need to question any guidance that they're giving. And there's so much evidence. I'm going to run through a little bit of it. And I know I'm kind of preaching to the choir with this audience. So I think my goal today is not so much to tell the audience what the conclusion that most of them are already coming to. I think what I'm going to share with the audience today are those facts. And do it in a way that you that are listening here today can take these talking points, take this evidence out to your communities and your family members and try to break through the trance that everybody is in that are unable to see evidence and then make informed decisions based on evidence. And if I can help you to go into your communities, your churches, go into your doctor's office and point out some things that are just very clear to see if you're willing to look at evidence, then we can slow down and hopefully stop this holocaust. And I'm not using that word overzealously. There's a holocaust that's coming for our children, and it's only allowed to come because of the trance that this mass psychosis has brought upon our country through waves of fear. So we make decisions a lot of the times because we have trust in institutions. You know, we're supposed to trust our doctor. We're supposed to trust the CDC and the NIH and the FDA. But throughout this whole COVID stuff, they have been lying to us. And, you could expect them to get some things wrong, but there's a pattern of lying to us that's led us to a situation right now where they're about to start vaccinating 5 to 11-year-olds.
I remember, and this is October.
It won't be long. You know, even Tucker Carlson said the other night, the next thing is they're going to mandate it.
That's coming.
And if you're a person who's thinking clearly and realize that this is not a good choice, and I'm going to talk about why it's not, and you stand against what's coming at you, you're going to be opposed to the federal authorities. Will they take your children if you refuse to vaccinate once it gets to the level of mandate? And
okay,
what is that going to look like?
Stop it right there. That was from October 29th. And I can guarantee you the issue here, remember, children are the currency of the globalists. You've got sex trafficking, human sex trafficking. You've got just absolutely incredible, perverse things happening with our children. You know, it's interesting that CNN, the producer for Anderson, I think it was Anderson Cooper, arrested on child solicitation of sex from children. I mean, the second one at CNN. And of course, I don't know how many people saw Don Lemon over the holiday, New Year's Eve float. Don Lemon talking to some, I don't know, I don't even know who this woman was, but the absolute perverse conversation that ensued. I'm not even going to address that, but the bottom line here is they're coming for your children, as evidenced by what's that doctor, Sanjay Gupta. I'm not even on Sesame Street talking about jabs. All right, what a perverse tactic that's taking place. I don't know how many people saw it. I'm not going to play it because it's just not worth the inconveniencing the electrons to play it. So this is a war that we're fighting. I want to go to the source video A at this point. Now, what Gary Haven was talking about the mass psychosis and about the they're coming for our children, all right? Let's dig down a little bit deeper. And I want to do this, and how I'm doing this is I'm attempting to present evidence in a logical, linear fashion. So let's take a look at the evidence. Let's take a look at how we got here to the extent where early treatment has been denied for this bioweapon known as SARS-CoV-2. Early treatment has been denied. It is now coming out where this denial of early treatment has cost hundreds of thousands of lives. People have said, well, follow the money. And that's a mantra of investigators. Follow the money. The vaccines, look at how much Pfizer is making. Look at how much these companies are making. Billions of dollars. Really, tens of thousands of dollars a minute. All right. But is it all about the money? No. No. It's about this great reset where they're all in. The power brokers have gone all in. So two videos, actually three in particular. I mentioned the two from Joe Rogan, that being Robert Malone, Dr. Robert Malone, and then Dr. Peter McCullough. Now, their appearances were reversed. McCullough appeared first and then Malone second. And then Dr. Zelenko, there was a reference to Dr. Zelenko's video. Dr. Zelenko talks about the suppression of early treatment. and how all of this fit in. Because people are saying, well, Donald Trump, look what he did, and he's promoting the vaccines. Well, yeah, now, okay, I don't know what's in his heart. I don't know. But back then, at the outset of all of this, he was taken to the woodshed by many people talking about, well, bleach and all this in your system. Well, wait a second. He never said drinking bleach or anything like that. He was referencing a number of different early treatment protocols and was absolutely vilified for doing so and misquoted and misconstrued. And really, his entire attack against this was absolutely, his attack strategy was subverted by people within his own administration. I contend that had he been allowed and not sabotaged, I believe that early treatment would have been made available, and we could have had many of our family members and friends not die because they received early treatment. But let's go to source of video A. This is Dr. Robert Malone on this on the suppression, at least this segment here, on the suppression of early treatment. Listen carefully to what he's got to say. And this starts at 29:30. Go ahead.
Why do you think that is? What do you think is going on with the pushback on ivermectin?
So it's not just ivermectin, it's hydroxychloroquine. And just to put a marker on that, there's good modeling studies that probably 500,000 excess deaths have happened in the United States through the intentional blockade of early treatment by the U.S. government.
Half a million.
That is a well-documented number. Okay? And it's a combination of hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. Now, when you ask me why, you're asking me to get into somebody's head. What I can say as a scientist is what I observe. The behaviors, the actions, the correspondence, these bizarre things like, don't you know it's a horse drug, y'all, right? Which is amazingly pejorative. I live in Virginia, okay? I can tell you the people around me, I live in a rural county and I raise horses. That was deeply offensive to use that language in that way. But there's clearly been an intentional push. And Zev Zelenko, who's a buddy, the guy that came out with the original protocol, the Zelenko protocol, and was the one, by the way, that wrote the letter to Trump advocating for hydroxychloroquine. Okay, kind of important to put that together. He's put together a great little video clip in which he clearly documents the conspiracy between Janet Woodcock and Rick Bright to make it so that physicians could not administer hydroxychloroquine outside of the hospital.
And who is Janet Woodcock and who's Rick Bright?
Rick Bright was the head of BARDA, the Biomedical Advanced Research Directorate, which is the group that, for instance, funded the J&J vaccine and Operation Warp Speed, etc. So they're the big ticket funder in Health and Human Service of biodefense products.
And who is she?
Janet Woodcock was head of Operation Warp Speed for drugs and until very recently head of the FDA. She is known as the person who kind of gets the credit, let's say, for the opioid crisis for her role at the FDA.
So between the two of them, there was some sort of a concerted effort to suppress the use of hydroxychloroquine?
Rick Bright, in videotaped testimony, has explicitly spoken about how they conspired to cook a strategy using emergency use authorization to make it so that hydroxychloroquine could only be administered in the hospital, which, by the way, is too late for when hydroxy should be used.
And why did they do that?
That is what is the unknown, and there are so many whys and hows behind this. I like to say there's a stack of stuff that doesn't make sense that's about this high. Now, there is – I can't get into Rick's head. I know Rick quite well. I don't know what – he's currently working for the Rockefeller. He did a whistleblower case, and then he left the government.
But, so he's working for the Rockefeller
Foundation. All I know is they did this.
All right.
And Rick.
Is that the end? All right. So you heard that. Let's drill down a little bit and let's see what Rick Bright has to say. And this clip will anger you as it did me when I think of the people who I've lost, friends I've lost, because their doctors would not give them any access to early treatment. Watch this. Oh, hang on just one. Okay. But think about the family members, the friends, the people that you know who you've lost to this toxic attack, this bioweapons attack. And by the way, I did finish a column this weekend as well for the Wisconsin Christian News. Folks, if you haven't done so already, go to wisconsinchristiannews.com and please donate to Wisconsin Christian News. The print fees have gone up like 31% for the paper. The costs have gone up. They're barely making it, and we need the assets like Wisconsin Christian News in the field. So please, in addition to subscribe, please donate. I was talking to Rob Pugh over the weekend, and look, they're having a bad time of it. So please support them. Okay, watch this. This is from Dr. Zelenko. And here is what Dr. Malone was talking about. Rick Bright, this is the guy. Now, make sure you remember his face and his name, because I want this guy. I want him. Go ahead.
A little bit about how chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine first came into your point of view.
You know, how did this first come up? I wish I'd never heard of chloroquine, the hydroxychloroquine. Honestly.
It is known as a malaria drug, and it's been around for a long time. And it's shown very encouraging, very, very encouraging early results.
I believe it was March 23rd. I got a call from Secretary Azar's chief counsel. The White House wanted us to move quickly on making this drug available.
At my direction, the federal government is working to help obtain large quantities of chloroquine.
I called my scientific team in BARDA, and they said, no way. There was no data to support that they had any benefit against the coronavirus. They pushed back, but Dr. Kadlec reiterated that directive to us and said, get on it, get it done. We came up with the option of an emergency use authorization. We could put boundaries in it. Restrict the drug to only be used in people who were hospitalized. And I was proud of our team for coming up with that compromise that we thought would protect Americans.
Have you ever heard of a Dr. Zelenko?
Yes.
According to the FDA, anecdotal reports suggest that these drugs may offer some benefit.
There was not a scientific reason to push either one of those drugs. The reason they were pushing them so hard was because the president was claiming that they were a miracle drug. Someone had given him this advice.
I happen to be taking it. I'm taking it, hydroxychloroquine. Right now, yeah.
Did you hear what he said afterwards? That, yeah, I received a letter
from a doctor the other day from Westchester, New York, around the area. He didn't want anything. He just said, sir, I have hundreds of patients, and I give them hydroxychloroquine.
So that was a letter I sent to the president.
But I thought it was a very well-crafted letter by a man who's a respected doctor.
He said it was a well-crafted letter.
It was about 6 days after that EUA. I woke up to an email string that had our assistant secretary for health, our director of FEMA, our ASPR, Dr. Kadlec, and the FDA all saying we need to flood the streets of New York and New Jersey with that drug as quickly as possible. And in that email discussion, someone was brave enough. They said, but wait a minute, the EUA says for hospitalized patients only. They said, no, it needs to go into the pharmacies. It needs to go out everywhere. The EUA doesn't matter. Push the drug out now.
Okay, if this drug works, right there for a second. It will be. Just keep that right there. Don't take that off the screen. This is April 5th of 2020. This is at the very onset. This is when the hydroxychloroquine, as an antiviral, having antiviral properties, a drug sanctioned by the World Health Organization as safe and effective, could have saved the lives of, yes, your grandfather, your grandmother, your mother, your brother, your sister, whoever you know, your friend. It could have saved that in a combination of other drugs. It could have saved it. And that man on the screen, Rick Bright, he is taking delight in fashioning an emergency use authorization to keep the drug not as a drug where you would be treated as an outpatient, but limiting it to an inpatient only use. Oh, he's so proud of himself for doing that at a time when hydroxychloroquine as an antiviral would be useless. Absolutely useless. Go ahead and continue with this.
Wonderful. It'll be so beautiful. It'll be a gift from heaven.
I lost it. I lost all respect for that chain of command, for that security that we as Americans have put in those people. And that is the moment I decided to break protocol.
When President Trump issued an executive order that every American should have access to hydroxychloroquine, that order was given to Secretary Azar. Secretary Azar gave that order to Larry Kudlow, who was the head of counsel for Health and Human Services. Larry Kudlow called Dr. Rick Bright from the HHS, who was the head of BARDA, B-A-R-D-A, the prime branch involved in vaccine research. How do I know all this? Dr. Bright himself, in his own words, says this in a documentary called Totally Under Control. I was in this documentary, and the segment right before mine, Dr. Bright speaks, and he gleefully admits to and walks through the mechanics of genocide. So in his own words, it'd be worth your while to review it. So what does he say? He says the following, that he and his team at BARDA did not agree with the president's directive. So they came up with a creative solution where instead of using the right to try pathway that the government had established, or the compassionate access care program, which essentially gives access to patients to medication outside of clinical trials under certain circumstances. Senator Ron Johnson was the one that advocated for this legislation. Instead of using that pathway, which would have made hydroxychloroquine accessible to every American in the outpatient setting, they crafted an emergency use authorization that restricted hydroxychloroquine access to hospitalized patients. I'll say that again. The President of the United States gave an order that every single American should have access. By the way, when the President of the United States announced that he's taking hydroxychloroquine, he mentioned that he got a letter from a doctor from upstate New York advising him. So that was my letter. And so I had influenced the president's thinking when it came to the efficacy and safety of hydroxychloroquine to such a degree that he himself was willing to take it. And he felt that every single American should have access. And by the way, I've noticed whatever the FDA decides, the rest of the world follows. So in a sense, we had an opportunity to scale hydroxychloroquine or early pre-hospital treatment globally. This would have ended the study. But instead, and there's Dr. Stephen Hatzteil. He worked with Dr. Peter Navarro, who was president's economic advisor. And Dr. Stephen Hatzteil did an interview and wrote an article explaining exactly what happened with this executive use authorization. Apparently, Janet Woodcock, who is currently the acting commissioner of the FDA under Biden, but at that point, under the Trump administration, had a senior position in the FDA, reached out in a very unusual, highly unusual way from the FDA to the HHS and collaborated together with Dr. Rick Bright to come up with the idea of how to restrict hydroxychloroquine access to only hospitalized patients and not to the outpatient setting, essentially killing the approach of treating this infection early. Now, exactly what the emergency use authorization did was open the national stockpile of hydroxychloroquine to whoever the emergency use authorization would have given it to. So that national stockpile was opened only to hospitalized patients. So in reality, any doctor could still have used it legally, because in America, any drug that's FDA approved may be used off-label for any reason if the doctor feels that that's appropriate. However, the wording of the emergency use authorization had implied and confused, including myself, every single doctor in America, because it sounded like it was not being approved for use in the outpatient setting. And what that did, since most physicians in America are now employed by larger institutions, hospital systems, the hospital systems placed restrictions onto their employees, the physicians, whether or not they could use this medication. And they limited its use to only a hospital setting. So in effect, what was created was an artificial obstacle for the access, the exact opposite of the intention of the President of the United States, to make it available to every American and hence every human being on the planet. Rather, it was undermined, sabotaged in the way I just described. And since we know that pre-hospital treatment could have reduced hospitalization and death by 85%, that means these people, this order, this trick that they played, is directly responsible for the genocide that is happening worldwide. Now, I have to give you more information. Now, we're going to get to remdesivir in a minute. Okay? All the governing bodies.
Stop that for a moment. I want to also point out at this point, that was, again, April of 2020. Now, understand the patriotic cabal of doctors, of scientists, people who cared, professionals who cared about people, who wanted to see early treatment, kept pushing and pushing, saying, look, use hydroxychloroquine or chloroquine. Use ivermectin. That was, again, April of 2020. Note that in December of 2020, there was the biggest explosion and fire in Taipei at the Taiwan pharmaceutical factory, the world's second largest hydroxychloroquine raw material factory. Think about that for a second. And reports as well during this time period in 2020 across the world, there were reports of pharmacies, of locations where hydroxychloroquine was stored, waypoints for hydroxychloroquine were being raided by mercenary type of groups. And the hydroxychloroquine was being set on fire, destroyed by other means. Now think about that. Isn't That's just a little bit strange, isn't it? And people will say, well, there's no use. Like you heard Rick Bright, that mope talking. Well, there's no, there's really absolutely no studies that hydroxychloroquine or chloroquine works. That's patently false, because during the SARS-CoV-1 outbreak, especially this goes back to 2006, hydroxychloroquine was used, in fact, used as well by the Chinese as an antiviral to combat SARS-CoV-1 in addition to SARS-CoV-2. And yes, the Chinese, Dr. Malone stated that in his discussion with Joe Rogan, that when he learned of this SARS-CoV-2, he received the package from the Chinese scientific community that stated hydroxychloroquine was being used as an early treatment tactic or product for SARS-CoV-2. Does that make sense yet? All right, let's pick up with Dr. Where was I? Dr. Malone? All right, let's pick up with Dr. Malone. You saw him talking about hydroxychloroquine, about what President Trump had said. And I believe had that been permitted, you'd see 500,000 people alive that are dead now because of that Muppet Bright and what he did. You saw the digging down with Dr. Zelenko. And now let's go back to Robert Malone with Joe Rogan, where we left off.
I can't prove. I can't get into Rick's head. I know Rick quite well. I don't know what he's currently working for, the Rockefeller. He did a whistleblower case and then he left the government. But all I know is they did this. And Rick admits on it on videotape that he did it, and he states that the reason was is that he believed there was no evidence of hydroxychloroquine being useful for this virus. Now that's false. Hydroxychloroquine was known to be effective against SARS-1.
That wasn't that regular chloroquine.
Hydroxy and chloroquine are closely related molecules. Hydroxy is slightly less toxic. By the way, one of the nice things, we had actually filed during Zika, I did a lot of drug repurposing, and I filed patents on the use of hydroxy in Zika. One of the reasons is because hydroxy is one of the few molecules that have antiviral activity that are safe in pregnancy. And you remember Zika was a pregnancy issue.
Yeah.
So hydroxy's been out there for a long time as having viral antiviral effects. And the other part of Rick's story that kind of doesn't make sense, that there was no data on efficacy, is that I was the guy that first acquired, because I had Chinese connections, the Chinese protocol for treating this virus. I got it in late February. And I sent it in to my buddies at the CIA and at the ASPR, at the Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response. So the government had those documents when Rick Bright made those determinations. So the assertion that there was no data on hydroxychloroquine at the time when this decision was made is just patently false. It's there. So what is the motivation? You're right. None of this makes sense. The only thing, you know, this is a journalist problem. And you know, the classic guidance is follow the money.
Yeah.
And so it is bizarre that Merck would come out with these explicit statements about the safety of ivermectin. Both ivermectin and hydroxy are on the WHO list of essential medicines. They have been administered for millions and millions of doses. They're among the safest medicines we know when administered within this acceptable window, pharmaceutical window. The ivermectin is even safer than hydroxy. So Merck coming out of the blue and saying ivermectin isn't safe is really inexplicable. Now, another thing is that I sit on the active committee for drugs as an observer. What is the active committee? This is the NIH committee that's guiding the clinical trials for these various repurposed and novel drugs. I saw, listened to, heard, witnessed the representative of Merck that's on the committee, because the committee is full of pharmaceutical representatives, even though it's an NIH public committee, explicitly attack the decision for the federal government to test ivermectin. She said there's no reason to do this. Now, what's happened since then is Active Styx is still testing ivermectin, and they've had to go to a higher dose because, as we pointed out, essentially their initial trial design was designed to fail. It was a short course with inadequate levels of drug. And so now they've upped it to, I think it's 5 days and 600 micrograms per kg. That's the current dosing in Active Styx. But there is clearly a concerted effort on the part of multiple players in the pharmaceutical industry in concordance with the federal government to kill ivermectin as a potential alternative early treatment strategy.
And if you're going to follow the money, the problem is there's not a lot in ivermectin because it is a generic drug and any compound pharmacy can make it and it's fairly cheap.
It's fairly cheap because it's easy to make. Yeah. And, you know, you can get ivermectin in bulk at less than a penny a dose.
Wow. So the original SARS is it 90% similar to SARS-CoV-2?
Terms 90 or 90. Right,
again, you're seeing the prevention, the deliberate withholding of early treatment. Remember, SARS-CoV-1 was a bioweapon. SARS-CoV-2 is an advanced bioweapon. In 2006, the Chinese reported having the ability to combine parts of four different viruses into one single genome. And the four different viruses or four different elements to the single genome included hepatitis C, the HIV virus, the human immunodeficiency virus, SARS-CoV-1, and actually elements of SARS-CoV-2 back in 2006. Now you may say, well, how is that even possible, given the fact that SARS-CoV-2 just kind of came out in 2019. Research will show back in April of 2000. Now, this, of course, this is after Health and Human Services here in the United States in 1999 began to explore the bioweaponization or advanced gain-of-function capabilities using the spike protein, all right? So, but in April of 2000, Ralph Baric, University of North Carolina, at the Chapel Hill, at the Carolina Vaccine Institute, used reverse genetics to generate a chimera coronavirus. This research, now think about this, this research back in 2000 was funded by the NIH, the National Institute of Health. It was funded through and by, not just the NIH, but the NIAID, Anthony Fauci, under grant numbers AI-23946, GM-63228, and AI-26603. The result was patented in 2002. At the same time, the same year, Chinese scientists, including and especially the bat lady, Xi Zhengli, began developing chimeric viruses using the gain of function attributes, which led to what I mentioned in 2006, this chimera virus involving four separate viruses. Now you got to go back as well, concerns regarding the gain of function research. It was really front page news back in 2011, for example, as it related to the bird flu, H5N1. I don't know how many people remember this. H5N1 was released from a laboratory in the Netherlands. That, of course, was the bird flu, the Asian influenza virus. And the University of Wisconsin. So what you have here, okay, there's a couple of elements here that are kind of converging. One is the obvious, as we talked about, is the cessation of any type of early treatment. Why? Because we have this genetic tool, genetic modifying serum that we're going to give everyone. So we can't have any early treatment of drugs that actually proved beneficial having antiviral properties. But you also have, so you've got that, but you also have continuation of the patents for the what they're determining or calling the vaccines, and involving, for example, the CDC and FDA, because remember, the CDC, FDA, the FDA especially, NIH, they have co-ownership of many of these so-called vaccines, all right? So it's a long and convoluted tale, but let's go back to Dr. Malone, because I want to get to Dr. McCullough as well, to add some more, add a different complexion to all this, because there's different facets to all this. You've got the suppression of early treatment. You've got this, well, let's just continue with Dr. Malone rather than me just ramble on. Go ahead. Or that would be the second. Yeah, that one right there. Go to 219 as opposed to 217. Go to the second one in the interest of time. Watch this, folks. This is a continuation from the same interview, Dr. Malone and Joe Rogan. It'll be in the program description box at HagmanReport.com. And here it is.
From the injection of the vaccine versus all of the variables that your body encounters when it's been infected by COVID?
That is another brilliant question. I'm not saying this to butter you up. And thank you for asking it. So it was a very broad question. And this is a peel the onion layers situation. I mean, you said, what are the differences?
Yeah.
Let's start at a high level. When you get infected, or I get infected, it's typically nasal or oropharynx. It's coming in through the mucosal membranes of your head, okay? And by the way, that's one of the other things that's kind of cool about Omicron in a good way, is that the prior strains infect mostly deep lung, and there's really fascinating data from Hong Kong suggesting that Omicron is infecting upper airway more. That is a characteristic of less pathogenic influenza viruses, and hopefully what we know about Omicron is, even though it's more infectious and replicates to higher levels, it's less pathogenic. It's a paradox. Well, that could explain it. Okay, so there may be some good news in Omicron. But getting back to your question, when you take the jab, you get a spike of spike. You get a bolus, a peak, fairly rapidly, of this viral protein. And it's in your body, and it's circulating in your blood. We know that. There's a Harvard study, Brigham and Women's, nurses, spike protein circulation after vaccination.
Can I pause you one second? When you test for COVID, you go in through the nose. If someone is getting Omicron, are they less likely to test positive because you're swabbing their nose?
No.
More.
All of these are initially coming in here.
So it still would exist in the nose, even though it's affecting the back of the throat.
It seems to be, well, it's clearly producing equal or higher levels. Delta was significantly higher in the nose by PCR, with all of the caveats about the problems with that cycle number. And Omicron seems to be even higher, significantly higher.
Okay.
Okay. So hits your nose, and then it goes down.
Okay.
Okay.
And it's affecting the throat for some reason. A lot of the people that I know that got Omicron had a throat ache, a soreness of the throat before.
That is paradoxically really good news. By the way, that's called primary data. Anecdotal primary data, but it beats modeling data from the CDC, which is what the New York Times has been reporting, that we're all have by this point, we're all supposed to have 70% or 80% of all the virus in the United States is supposed to be Omicron. That is based on what is now known to be erroneous modeling. And all of us that were inside, when we saw this come out, we knew the group in the UK that did the modeling, and we were like, oh, these guys have overpromised. They have basically put out scare modeling all the way through this outbreak, and we should take this with a grain of salt. And now the press is all backpedaling, and the CDC is backpedaling, saying, oh, I think we got it wrong. And there's still a lot of Delta in the population. But, you know, your buddies, if it's circulating here in Austin, and you're hearing people that are having more of the sore throat and runny nose and less of the my chest is burning,
right,
and I've lost taste and smell.
Right.
Okay. That's just to kind of open that up a little bit. With H1N1 influenza, just to take one example, we have high pathogenicity and low pathogenicity versions of H1N1. What that means is some of them will kill you and some of them won't, more or less. The difference seems to be the virus, the receptor, the nuances of the receptor that the virus is hitting and using to initially infect cells, and the low pathogenicity H1N1s infect the upper airway, and the high pathogenicity H1N1s infect the deep lung. The prior SARS-CoV-1s have been hitting deep lung. So this report that you're giving me from your buddies that you think is probably Omicron is consistent with the Hong Kong data, and it all fits into a box. And we know from South Africa for sure that Omicron, and we're, you know, the WHO made the statement there are no known deaths associated with Omicron in the world. Now, there may be a couple somewhere.
I thought it was just the United States. Okay, I didn't know they're saying for the world. Right.
Yeah.
And queued up for the next segment. But I want to just toss in a couple of bits of information here. Since that was aired, I think it was last week, a couple of things have taken place. Number one, according to the information that we have, and this is pretty much live, Delta is still the Delta strain based on genomic sequencing. And I don't have a clue how they do this. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. I'm an investigator. But according to all of the information that we're getting, Delta is still the predominant strain here in the United States. Now, Omicron, now the initial, supposedly, the initial virus had an R-naught factor of 2 to 3. In other words, for every one per, the R-naught factor is how much one person can spread it, or how fast and one person can spread it. So, for example, if the R-naught factor is 2, then generally speaking, one infected person will infect 2 others. And so the R-naught factor for the initial strain was 2 to 3. For the Delta strain, it was 5 to 6, which is pretty significant. But for Omicron, you're looking at 7 to 8 and even higher, which blows out even measles, okay? But what Dr. Malone is saying, that's pretty good news if it can replace the other viruses, the other variants, because it's less severe. Now, none of this can be discussed. Dr. Malone, how this particular interview really took off was when Dr. Malone was knocked off of Twitter, was banned from Twitter. And I would note that when an illusion is being created, there can be no question, no questions can be asked at all. You cannot have any intellectual discussions. And this is exactly what happened. Yet, you can see on Joe Rogan, of course, Dr. Malone engaging in intellectual discussion here. I would note that I want to go back a little bit. I want people to think about, remember September 28th of 2001. What do we see at that point in time? Not 9/11, but 9/28/01. That was when the anthrax attacks in the United States began. And I find it very interesting when you have a blatant attack of weaponized anthrax, a very overt, highly publicized attack, like we had, again, 9/28/01. Why didn't we shut down then in the same fashion, with arguably a more deadly pathogen, that being anthrax? Why didn't we shut down then like we did in 2020? When you go back and look, and just to expand a little bit on the backstory here, when you go back and look at the run-up to where we're at today, you're going to find in 2013 to 2015, actually, work done in those 3 years, inclusive of the years mentioned. In February 2016, Ralph Barrett co-authored the following document, SARS-like WIV-1, which stands for Wuhan Institute of Virology 1. That's SARS-like WIV-1 COVID, poised for human emergence. The reason I mention it now is because that predated and actually alerted the scientific community that, hey, we've got this SARS-CoV-1-like virus, this bioweapon that we created in conjunction with the Chinese, ready for release. I want to go back to Dr. Malone at this point. Oh, and I would add a couple of more things here. The CDC owns the patent on SARS, the basis for SARS-CoV-1 and SARS-CoV-2. SARS-CoV-2 is a subclade of SARS. How does this work? By the way, it's 4,100 patents owned by the CDC. And I find it very interesting, too, and I'm tossing some information out here. That's really a non sequitur, but I'm going to toss it out anyway. Moderna, a company that never produced anything, suddenly has now 141 patents that have been funded by the NIH and Fauci's NIAID. I also find it very telling that the University of North Carolina, again, Ralph Barrick, gave Moderna the formula for the, quote, vaccine 1 month before the SARS-CoV-2 outbreak. Nothing to see here, folks, right? Let's go to the 235-45 segment and continue with Dr. Malone.
Surgeon General in the state of Florida has put out public statements now on, I think it's Twitter, among other things, saying, decrying what the federal government has done of pulling all of the regular monoclonals. What I'm hearing from frontline docs is those you know, older Regeneron monoclonals, et cetera, are still very effective in their hospitalized population.
I should have set this up, and I apologize, folks. What they're talking about here, what he's talking about here, remember I spoke of, and they're speaking of, the suppression of early treatment? Now they're finding monoclonal antibodies, which that's a whole program by itself, because did you know that the monoclonal antibodies, Eric detects, you know how they're made? With chimeric, human to mice chimeras? Mice having human organs, human organ properties, using aborted, actually freshly aborted fetuses, taken to almost full term. There's like three different ways that these monoclonal antibodies are made, and I just named two of them. So that should, I mean, there's a huge question with monoclonal antibodies, but the issue in this conversation is that just like the suppression of early treatment with antivirals. Now, what are we seeing today? The suppression of monoclonal antibodies, and being state specific as well, if you dig deeper into this, Florida, Texas, they're getting denied monoclonal antibodies. Go ahead and continue with that. Thank you.
Because it's still predominantly Delta,
mm.
and yet they're no longer able to get it.
So the government has literally stopped the distribution of medicine,
true,
effective medicine, for a disease that exists currently. When has that ever happened before?
Ooh, hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin?
Yeah, but in this level, where like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin were off-label uses. This is something that has emergency use authorization.
On label, yeah.
This is wild.
It is. Are they brain dead?
Are they trying to just encourage vaccination? Is that what all it is? Is this a money grab?
I didn't realize the time is so short. This next source video, see Joe Rogan Experience, episode number 1747. By the way, Robert Malone was 1757. This predates Malone. This is Dr. Peter McCullough. Different styles, they're friends and such, and a few contradictory issues, but mainly together on the same page. At the 5-minute mark, go ahead and play that when ready. Ready? Okay. All right, hang on a second. But we're running out of time. So, folks, watch these in totality. I'm telling you, you need to know this. Here we go.
On some principles early on. The first collaboration, and my contribution was really to get people together, get the ideas together, and publish. And I had the publication strength that other people didn't, and got the first organized ideas together in April, May, June. We submitted our paper July 1st to the American Journal of Medicine, which is one of the highly ranked journals in medicine, and it was published in August. And this is the first publication teaching doctors how to treat COVID-19 with a multi-drug regimen. And the ground rules were this. We knew it was insufficient time for large randomized trials. Those take 2 to 4 years. I lead large randomized trials. I've published in the New England Journal of Medicine. I know what this is about. I'm on steering committees. We don't have 2 to 4 years. This is a mass casualty situation. We use the precautionary principle, meaning that this is a mass casualty event. We can't wait. We're looking for drugs with a signal of benefit and acceptable safety. We knew very early on that this viral infection had three components. It was viral replication, cytokine storm or inflammation, and then thrombosis. So we knew a single drug wasn't going to handle the problem. No way. It was going to be a multi-drug regimen, just like with HIV, just like with hepatitis C. No difference. It's going to be multi-drugs. So precautionary principle. We used signals of benefit, acceptable safety, drugs in a combination, test, retest, and go. And so at the time we submitted our paper, Joe, there was about 4,000 papers in the peer-reviewed literature on COVID-19 I'm sorry, check that. There was 55,000 papers in the peer-reviewed literature on COVID-19 and about 4,000 that could have related to certain drugs, but not a single one put the concepts together on how to treat patients.
So this was the first one, and it was published in August.
August of 2020, American Journal of Medicine, the title of the paper was The Pathophysiologic Rationale for the Early Ambulatory Treatment of COVID-19. That quickly, after August, spawned the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons Home Treatment Guide. So AAPS, okay. Interesting
organization. What he's saying there is the early treatment was available. Folks, watch the entire video. I have like four or five other segments here I wanted to show you. But again, my delivery was a little bit slow, but deliberately slow because the information is really heavy. Here's the bottom line. None of this is about your health. This was an advanced bioweapon released after, after the anthrax attacks, released after the H5N1, after that didn't really take off, after the swine flu of 76 really didn't take off. You can see the run-up to where we're at now, and you can see anyone refusing to take this genetically modified devil's semen. You can see that we will be ostracized from everything. And of course, remember, it's all about your health. Folks, please go to episode description, download those videos, watch them. Watch them twice if you have to. Understand, we are in the fight of our lives. And God help us.